All right. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. It is an honor to be here and to hear the speakers and to be blessed with our excellent moderators. So thank you very much. I'm here to talk about a project entitled I Need My Own Place for My Health to Get Better, which is a qualitative analysis of patient perspectives on the role of housing in potentially preventable hospitalizations for diabetes and heart failure. And I'm Tatine Tintel. You see me there at the bottom. I'm at University of Hawaii. And I want to acknowledge my awesome student, Michelle Quintel, who's actually the spearhead of this project. This was her capstone project for her MPH. And because we're so far away, she wasn't able to be here. So I'm also presenting this on her behalf. So we have no conflicts to disclose. So potentially preventable hospitalizations are defined as diagnoses for which timely and effective outpatient care can help to reduce the risk of hospitalization, either by preventing the onset of an illness or condition, controlling an acute episodic illness or condition, or managing a chronic disease or condition. These have been the focus of considerable interest in policy because they are at the intersection of decreasing costs, potentially, and increasing healthcare quality. About 10% of hospitalizations are considered to be potentially preventable, and diabetes and heart failure in particular are the common, and heart failure in particular is the leading cause of potentially preventable hospitalizations in the U.S. A lot of this research in this area is based on administrative data. Specifically, the metrics are defined by AHRQ to figure out what is a potentially preventable hospitalization, and those are their prevention quality indicators. What we were doing in this project was really trying to understand more than the administrative data could tell us. So we were asking patients to tell us the stories of why they felt they were hospitalized with preventable conditions, to really understand factors that were beyond what we could see when we just, you know, crunched the numbers in the administrative data. So the particular focus of this study is to look at the factors by which housing in particular was impacting potentially preventable hospitalizations. Again, this was part of a larger study where patients were telling their stories of a lot of different kinds of factors. And in a lot of stories, precipitating social factors were really coming up in the background. And these led to practical problems that then led to preventable hospitalizations. And Michelle was working on this project with our team, and she felt housing kept coming up over and over again. And so that was something she wanted to explore further. As you probably all know, housing is a really important social factor in health, and unstable housing or homelessness can both lead to really negative health effects. And we thought that even though there's, you know, some strong research in housing and health, interestingly, the impact of housing on potentially preventable hospitalizations was not particularly well studied, even though this is this really high policy priority area, with a lot of administrative activity around this, too, in terms of hospitalizations trying to increase their healthcare quality in this domain. So our study site was Queens Medical Center. This is the largest tertiary medical center in Hawaii. Our sample was drawn from people who were admitted to the hospital with diagnosis of potentially preventable conditions, so congestive heart failure and diabetes. They had to be hospitalized between the times we were doing the interviews, so June 2013 and December 2014. And we were focusing specifically on the racial and ethnic groups of priority in our populations. So we looked at Native Hawaiian and other Pacific Islanders, Filipinos, other Asians, so that's Japanese, Chinese, Korean, and white. And so our full study sample was 90 individuals that we talked to. We talked story with them. We asked questions for them to elicit their stories about what they felt were the real reasons why they were experiencing these potentially preventable hospitalizations. Then two independent coders reviewed these recordings. We also looked at the notes from the interviews and the information from the surveys that we'd given them as well. And then together we created a consensus coding document in the end, and the consensus coding document is used in these final analyses. So again, the overall sample was 90 individuals that we had talked to. And about 21 individuals reported housing as a theme that they were saying was one of the stories of why they felt they were hospitalized for this potentially preventable condition. So that was a decent amount of the individuals that we were talking to. As I mentioned before, we had a survey that we asked. In that survey, there was a question that was, you know, are you unstably housed? And about 12 people reported being unstably housed on that instrument. And among those, about 10 of those individuals specifically reported homelessness. But you can see that and all of those people were people that also, when they told their qualitative stories, were reporting housing as one of their themes. So that, you know, showed some interesting concordance there. But you can see that, you know, it's not just homelessness and unstable housing that was impacting individuals. To say that housing was something that was impacting their preventable hospitalizations, about half of the people reporting a housing theme never would have come up on a questionnaire if you had asked specifically about unstable housing in a very direct way. So if we hadn't heard their stories, I don't think we would have really understood the full scope at which housing was impacting their, or at least their own sense of why they were hospitalized for this condition. So here's the overall sample demographics. The blue is Native Hawaiian, other Pacific Islanders. The red is white. The purple is Filipinos. And the 13% in green is other Asian. And this is the sample of people reporting reporting a housing-related theme. And you can see this very similar proportions of Native Hawaiians, other Pacific Islanders, but a little bit more percentages of whites and Filipinos in the housing sample, and much less, you see here, this is the overall sample, and here's the housing sample. Fewer other Asian groups were in that slice, in the housing sample slice. So what the main focus of my talk is really the themes that emerged from these stories about why housing was impacting their preventable readmission and what the patients were telling as their stories. So we identified four sort of main areas in which they were describing these issues, and then each of those we noted some sub-themes as to why those were impactful to the preventable readmissions or to the preventable hospitalizations, some of which were preventable readmissions as well. So the first I'm going to talk about is issues in chronic care management. Remember, these people all have heart disease or diabetes. So one issue that came up was the difficulty of following their medical directives. So here's a quote from somebody, from a man who says, so they tell me, you know, you don't drink any water. And I tell the doctor, them, you try not to drink any water where I live. It's cool talking about that when you're in your AC and you're talking to me about that, you know, what I've got to do, and I can't live like that. So it's Hawaii, right? It's hot. He doesn't have any access. You know, it's very hot where he is. He knows he's not supposed to drink any water, according to his congestive heart failure, but it's hard not to do that. And he feels that the guidelines he's receiving are not really congruent with the life that he's experiencing. And so he's not able to follow his chronic care management plan. Another is issues around medication management. So this individual says, last week I lived in a household with six people, but me and my sister, we got into a disagreement, and I don't live there anymore. I just sleep at the bus stop. I need to find me one shelter where I can take my medications, because you know it's not okay when you're not taking your medications. So again, he knows he's supposed to be taking his medications, but here the sort of life events have intervened and he's not able to follow his medication management plan. Another challenge was appointment follow-ups. So this woman tells a story that she had an appointment with a psychiatrist, but something came up and she couldn't make the appointment. Then she remembers, oh, it was our elevator broke. So she had so many things and then the elevators broke, so she couldn't go anywhere. So she was really unable to get, you know, around from her apartment, considering her circumstances because of this issue with the housing and sort of, you know, it was, she had a place to live, but that place to live was not in good condition. And then the final theme of chronic care management was just generally issues of self-care. And this individual kind of typified this story where she says, you know, it's hard to know how to take care of yourself when you don't have a safe place to live. A second group of themes came up around housing related to dietary challenges. The first was lack of cooking tools. So this individual says, I'm cooking most of my stuff, and the one problem, I'm in just living in a room area. So he just lives in a studio apartment. I'm just running off like a toaster oven, a microwave, and a little broiler. So I need to navigate through all that because I don't have a full-blown kitchen, and I wish I did because I love to cook. So he knows he's supposed to be eating this healthy diet. He knows he's supposed to be cooking all these stir fries with vegetables, and yet his circumstances are making it really challenging to, you know, to really do that. Another is the dietary challenges related to limited access to healthy food. So this woman tells a story, you know, I'm under a lot of stress, how I'm living right now. She's in a transition home. And she said, I barely eat where I'm staying at. It's because the food they give us, I cannot eat a lot of salt, and most of the food is salt. So she's in this transition home, you know, she has a place she can stay safely right then, but the food that they're providing for her is food that, you know, is not meeting her dietary regimen that she knows, again, she's supposed to be following. And similarly, another individual says, you know, he's getting food from food pantries, and he says, you know, I know I go to the churches to get food, but all the food over there is canned goods. And then finally, this sort of issue of overall lack of facilities came up. And this was a sort of pull quote we put in the front of the talk. This man says, I need my own place. That's what I need to get better. The way it's supposed to be, where I can be free to eat what I like, make what I like for my own health. you know, live my life better than before. I got to get my own place and get out of this area. Another issue that came up was stigma and discrimination. And so one individual discussed the stigmatization of homelessness impacting specifically their ability to get strong clinical care. So this man was trying to get clinical care and felt that they were judging him and in the clinical care setting. And he said he wishes they wouldn't be so judgmental because even though I do drugs and I'm homeless, it doesn't make me a bad person. You know, how people look at me when you tell them you're homeless or they find out, it's a totally different look. And he started to cry. And, you know, we listened to all these recordings, and this one particularly was, you know, very, very heartbreaking. Also, discrimination of the disabled, and this woman lived with roommates, but she was handicapped, and she said, you know, she's worried the roommates don't want her there anymore. She says she knows they can't do anything as long as she pays rent, and they can't make her leave, but she feels like they're pressuring her to trying to find a place, and it's not like she can just jump in a car and go look in an apartment, and she was feeling a lot of stress around that circumstance as well, that she felt it made it hard for her to, you know, deal with her chronic care condition, or her chronic condition. The final theme was overall stress and hardship. So just generally, there was the sense that, you know, it would be nice to be in a safer home and to be in better circumstances. For instance, this woman who said, you know, being on the streets and having no place to live, it's kind of dangerous. So the worry of sort of being in that environment, you know, really doesn't do anything to help her manage her condition and leads to why she might be hospitalized. Another was just the high cost of living, and this individual was paying for his family to stay in a hotel room. So he says, you know, it's a two-bedroom apartment. We pay $181 a day. We've been there since March, which was several months after this interview was taking place. And he says, I'm in here for 7 days. He's in the hospital for diabetes. And he said, but his credit card is still paying for the room of the hotel. And it was just giving him so much stress, right, to be in the circumstance where he's taking care of his family, and yet, you know, he's also hospitalized, but he can't really spend his time focusing on getting better. And then finally, the challenging life events. And this has actually been coming up recently. We've been doing some homeless sweeps in our community, and people have mentioned that this is a particular issue as well, sort of in a whole different environment than this. But this individual says, you know, it's difficult to find housing, and he's been locked out of his housing he was living in, which meant that his prescriptions were on one side, and he was on the other side of the padlock. And so there's his meds, right, but he can't get to them. And meds, of course, are expensive and hard to get to. And so really impactful, again, why he might be hospitalized for a preventable condition. So we felt that this just overall gave a more comprehensive picture of housing-related pathways to preventable hospitalizations, and we thought it was important that almost 25% of all respondents reported that housing was a key factor to their preventable condition. And really focuses on the need to, you know, consider issues outside of the domain of the medical care setting that really, of course, are impacting these things that we're really focusing quite heavily on in the medical domain. We describe the specific mechanisms connecting housing to potentially preventable hospitalizations, including these challenges of chronic care management, dietary challenges, stigma and discrimination, and overall stress and hardship. So some limitations. Of course, this housing sample is not fully representative of all people with potentially preventable admissions, just, of course, generally because we interviewed in Hawaii, which is in a unique place, but also because of our study exclusion criteria, which excluded people with limited English proficiency and altered mental status, so dementia or if they were comatose. And, of course, those individuals would have different housing-related challenges. We also feel like this might not be generalizable. Of course, you know, we're in Hawaii, so maybe not generalizable to everybody. We do have this, you know, very high homelessness rate in Hawaii, and we have recent policies that are really, you know, trying to address this, but maybe actually exacerbating the impacts of housing related to health. So we need to have better solutions, ideally, to address this complex issue, including, you know, not being siloed across domains. We don't think this housing issue, of course, though, is exclusive to Hawaii, right? Many areas struggle with this, including places with high cost of living, but many you might not, you know, initially suspect, and maybe communities in which many of you guys reside. Maybe these are challenges as well there. So, again, we feel like there's real opportunity for collaboration, maybe hospital-based information if they do collect this information, with the caveat, of course, right, that, you know, just asking people if they were unstably housed or if they had were homeless wasn't really enough to really get at the full scope of what all the factors were that were leading to preventable hospitalizations. So that's the end of my talk. I just want to thank my funders and our center. It was funded by NIMHD and part of the Center for Native and Pacific Health Disparities Research. And then finally, thank our awesome team, including Michelle, this was her project, and all the other folks that worked on this project. So thank you, and I guess we have a few minutes for questions. Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah, I would be curious to know what other people do because we felt like, we found these different domains, so I guess you could ask something in each of those domains. You know, certainly we want to know if people are unstably housed and they need help following their hospital admission to find housing, right? So there, I think we do still want that question. But, you know, then maybe some follow-up questions that are specifically asking, you know, is your housing situation leading to challenges in your chronic care management? Is your housing situation leading to challenges in your dietary intake? You know, try to get at those domains. And maybe that would allow for more of a full spectrum of how housing might be impacting people who, in theory, are stably housed, but maybe not in an ideal situation.
Right, right.
To your social workers, yeah. Yeah, in our hospital, some people get flagged to the hospital, to the social worker, but not everybody does. It's not an automatic thing. Even if you report housing, there's just certain groups in which they always get flagged. And then if a doctor, you know, a provider says, oh, I need to flag this person also, those are the pathways. But they're not a standardized, you know, there's not an algorithm, basically, that gets you there no matter what. There's kind of a personal intervention piece. And we have a real problem with this in our community, specifically with the readmissions problem, where people are in the hospital, they finally get stable, and then they're discharged and they're homeless, right? And so you can see every single one of those domains coming up in terms of people and then being readmitted with the same problem, you know, a week or a half later. And it's so frustrating, I think, for everyone, right? And so, because the readmission policies CMS has implemented, I do think it's pushing hospitals to really think outside their own silo of being a medical care center and really addressing these, you know, trying to connect with these. But it continues to be a challenge of how to do that and how to build a workforce that's efficiently able to do that, right, including the social work workforce in the hospital that can be the, you know, providers for everybody that needs this help. All right. I think we're done. Thank you guys very much.